Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, the 28th of May, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We welcomed Republican State Rep Doug Dubitsky to talk about a controversial housing bill and other aspects of legislation passed in Hartford earlier in the week. Hearst Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor Dan Haar chimed in on the biggest stories around the state, including the future of the WNBA's Connecticut Sun. CBS News correspondent Torian Small dropped by to chat about the ongoing tax and budget talks in D.C. that could affect thousands of upper-income Connecticut residents. All the craziness coming out of the state capitol now in this annual last sprint of days up until adjournment next week. Joining us right now, Republican State Rep Doug Dubitsky to talk about that, and especially that housing bill that was finally passed around 11 or 11:30 last night. Doug, good to have you back. How are you, sir? How you been?
I am tired, Paul. I am tired. I'm fighting the battle up here. I'm getting a lot of sleep.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, you know, what you guys and gals, Doug, have to do, and this drives me crazy, and I know people scream at me about this, but I say, hey, maybe someday we can have a full-time legislature or have a longer session, because you know what, Doug, honestly, I don't think good legislation, I don't know what you think, I don't think good lawmaking comes from jamming things in at the end of a calendar. I just don't, you know? I just don't.
Well, it's funny you say that, because most years I introduce two separate bills.
Mm-hmm.
One is to make us truly part-time, with part-time pay and no benefits. We meet like 3 months every other year, do a budget and get out, very much like Texas.
Yeah.
The other bill is to make us full-time with full-time pay, full-time benefits, and, you know, we'll just be a full-time legislature like New York and many of the other states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really think we need to pick one or the other, because what we have is too much of each and not enough of either.
Yeah, good point there, Doug. So, Doug, talk about this housing bill, and I want you to clarify something for my listeners. The aspect of this bill, which I found just unbelievable, that would have allowed religious organizations to set up these clusters with all good intentions, I guess, for homeless individuals on their property, that was stripped out of the bill last night. Is that true?
Well, it was stripped out in the original major amendment.
Yeah.
It was originally a 3-page bill.
Okay.
And the Democrats put in a 92-page amendment to a 3-page bill.
Yeah.
And that 92-page amendment contained 16 separate bills that had gone through, I think it was 4 or 5 different committees.
Yeah.
And they were all just smashed into this one giant monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thankfully that one piece, which would have allowed, as of right, every religious organization to have a homeless shelter on their property without regard to zoning, without regard to parking, without regard to anything. Basically, you just get a bunch of Connex boxes or those mini houses or little sheds, and you plop them on every church property in historic districts on main streets, and you run yourself a little homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm. So that
outdoor bathrooms, outdoor kitchens. You know, it just would have been a complete nightmare.
So what was there, Doug, and the guest is State Rep Doug Dubitsky, Republican. So was there a lot of pushback to pulling that out, or did the Dems say, hey, okay, to move this along, we'll get rid of that?
Well, when they put this 92-page amendment on, I'm sure there was a lot of horse trading and wrangling and pearl clutching behind the scenes in the Democrat caucus room. We don't get to see that. All we see is this huge thing dropped on our heads, and they say, well, here's our amendment. We're going to start debating it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pulling that little piece out, you know, I'm sure they knew that that was going to garner a lot of opposition from all corners. So I guess they figured 92 pages and 16 separate bills was enough for one day.
There were 17 folks across the aisle, Doug, that voted no on this. It wasn't your typical 101 to 50. It turned out to be, and everybody did vote, 84 to 67. Were you surprised at the 17 defections? Did you think there'd be more, there'd be less? The end number, how did you feel about that?
Well, I actually thought there were going to be about 24.
Okay.
I really thought that the vote was going to be pretty close. You know, we knew it was going to pass because the Democrats don't bring up a bill for debate unless they pre-count the votes and know it's going to pass. But I did think it was going to get pretty close. You know, it got, you know, not too far off, but I thought we were going to get 5 or 6 more Democrats, because it really does significant damage to a lot of towns. And because there are so many different elements in it, there's something in there that everybody hates. So, you know, I guess sufficient numbers of Democrats held their nose and voted for it, but there were plenty that just said, we can't live with this. Like the parking was one of them, which said that you could have residential parking. Mm-hmm. Residential development.
Yeah.
No matter how big a residential development, you could build it without regard to having any minimum number of parking spaces. So if you've got, like in my town, we have we've got some old dirt roads that are only about 10 or 12 feet wide.
Yeah.
You know, imagine putting a 20 unit apartment building on a 10 foot wide dirt road without any off street parking. Well, where are you going to put the cars?
Come on, Doug. Don't ask the tough questions. Come on, really.
and in the cities, you know, they anticipate that people just park on the street or they'll take the bus.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they can build an apartment building with, you know, a couple hundred units.
Sure.
Well, that's an awful lot of people that have to get to work in the morning and come home at night. Well, are they all going to take the bus? Mm-hmm. Is there sufficient public transportation in the area? If not, they've got to put their cars somewhere.
One would think.
So a lot of the people who lived in the cities were also a little perturbed by this, and I know that caused many of them to vote against this bill.
Well, Doug, thanks for joining us. Get some rest if you can. Republican State Rep. Doug Dubitsky, the guest. Doug, good to hear from you. Take care. Get some rest, and we'll chat down the road, I'm sure.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. State Rep. Doug Dubitsky there. Right around every Wednesday afternoon, about this time, 5:15 or so, give or take a minute or so, Dan Haar joins us, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
Good afternoon. I've developed a new metric for covering the Capitol in the last week.
And that's, what's that?
It's at what moment is the, if you take the cumulative amount that people are pissed off at each other, right? You know that it's at midnight Wednesday night, next Wednesday night, the bell rings. And the gavel goes down, and everybody's happy, and they're all drinking and having fun together. And we had a session, let bygones be bygones.
Yeah.
We fought, and we won some, and we lost some. Right? That's the low point. That's when it reaches the least pissed off.
Yeah.
Because they're all in it together. Right? But at what point, and I've concluded that right now, this moment, right this second,
this is
right
bad.
Now.
This is bad.
This very instant at 5:18 p.m. on Wednesday, the 28th of May, is the moment when more people are pissed off at more different people about more different issues than anything else at the Capitol.
Yeah, and thank God we have you to tell us about that. Now, first of all, before we get into all these bills, with housing and the money for striking workers, which I said the governor, I guess the governor said no to already again today. Tell us your big story here regarding the Connecticut Sun and whether or not they will be exiting Connecticut. I saw you posted it a while ago, so what's up?
Yeah, four legislators led by State Senator Kathy Austin, who's the powerful co-chair of appropriations, mm-hmm. and who represents her district includes the tribes,
yeah.
and who I described as the best friend of the tribes
yeah.
in the legislature. Not to say she does their bidding, but she supports, you know, economic
sure.
benefits to them. Mm-hmm. And they went to unnamed officials at Mohegan Sun and said, what's the deal with the sale of the team? We mm-hmm. want to keep the team here. Mm-hmm. We want to hear that you're keeping the team here. We don't want you to sell the team to another bidder who's going to take it to Boston or New York or Philadelphia, not
yeah.
New York, but Boston or Philadelphia.
Philly, yeah.
So, right. So they, on Friday at 8 a.m., after a 2 a.m. session, because that's how Senator Austin rolls, she apparently doesn't sleep, and she works all the time, she went with a delegation of three state House members, mm-hmm. and they met with a person at Mohegan Sun, and there are different versions of what was said. There were four legislators. Three
yeah.
of the four that I spoke to, and I didn't talk to the fourth, told me that, yes, Mohegan Sun is very much leaning towards keeping the team here and maybe getting a partner to share the risk. And, of course, they would have to share the upside.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're crazy. I don't think anything is going to appreciate more than a WNBA team in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I think these things are going to be worth $500 million in 5 years. But let's say they decide to bring in a partner.
Yeah.
That's what they heard. And that's what they told me they heard. Not a commitment from the tribe, but a general statement that that's the way they're leaning. The tribe, in response to me saying, hey, did you tell these legislators that, issued only a statement. They said nothing else, but they issued a statement which said that anything other than all options are on the table is pure speculation.
Mm.
Then, an hour later, after I posted, the governor conceded to a press conference that he met with, among other people during the week, Jeffrey Flachs, who's the CEO of Hartford Healthcare.
Ooh.
And when asked why he met with Jeffrey Flachs by our friend Mike Cerulli at Channel 8, he said, I'm interested in talking with business leaders who want to keep the Connecticut Sun in Connecticut.
Huh.
And you may recall, did we talk last week about the name of the Hartford XL Center?
No, we
okay.
did not. I think that story popped right after we did, so
yeah,
I know you've been looking at that.
Yes, this is all related. I speculate that the new name, which is expected to be announced on Monday,
mm-hmm.
it could be later. We don't, you know, it could be earlier, it could
okay.
be later. But we're expecting them to announce a new name
yeah.
any day now. They have an agreement, but the lawyers have to sign it. And I speculated that it's either Cigna or Hartford Healthcare.
Huh.
And so the name Jeffrey Flachs, the CEO of Hartford Healthcare, has emerged in a couple of places.
Yeah.
A couple of different people told me to talk to him about the Connecticut Sun. And so maybe there's a big grand agreement here. Hartford Healthcare gets its name on the Civic Center, which is heretofore
yeah.
the XL Center.
Yeah.
Not heretofore, but F4.
Sure.
And maybe they join as a partner in some way. They're not going to kick in hundreds of millions of dollars.
No.
But maybe they join as a partner, and maybe some games are played up here in Hartford. It's all amorphous
yeah.
right now.
See, Dan, that's my point. I think for the team to survive, and listen, I've been in the Mohegan Sun Arena for plenty of concerts, a couple of games. The experts will tell you, you probably talk to these people, the building is small, especially for the appreciation, as you say, that the WNBA is going to have. They should play in Hartford. It's a bigger building. It's easier to get to, and to me, that's a no-brainer, but I don't count.
Right now, they're selling tickets. Right. And
yeah.
don't forget, I shouldn't say don't forget. I want to tell you that there is a significant TV revenue sharing in the WNBA. So the smart leagues, the NFL being the prototype,
mm-hmm.
figured out that the league is the national entity.
Yep.
Baseball hasn't quite figured that out yet. The Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Giants and the Braves still get the bulk of their local TV money, right? Those teams are still richer than the Pirates and the Brewers and so forth. The Indians. Yeah. I'm sorry, the Guardians. But in any case,
shame on you.
Oh, for crying out loud! What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? I'm 60 something years
you
old.
You and me both, right?
My family is from Cleveland.
Oh, really? Okay. So there you go. So it's genetic in you. I get it. In a couple of minutes we have left, your thoughts as to what's going on right now. The housing bill, it passed the House, Dan. Wasn't really resounding. You think Ned Lamont actually signs this if it gets
He's
through the Senate?
Yes. Yes, he's going to sign it. The bottom line is that the housing bill doesn't do as much good as the proponents had hoped, and it doesn't do anything close to the harm. You should have seen. I was at the well of the House last night listening to the Republicans say that this is going to destroy our communities and all this stuff. And it's like, for crying out loud, you're asking towns to just say, to just give a number, how much affordable housing. And yes, they still have 830G, which doesn't have a lot of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is all about getting to the moratorium. So the bottom line is that housing bill chips away in a small way at a giant problem. And that's about as far as it can go. And the governor did indicate he was going to sign it. He didn't commit to signing it. He suggested he was going to sign it. And there's no reason why he won't. The striking workers bill, very interestingly, about an hour and a half ago, a few hours ago, they stripped out all the other provisions from the striking workers bill, which were the warehouse protections, so that they could give the reason they did this, in the opinion of some, is so that they could give the governor a clean bill. Go ahead, make my day.
Yeah.
Here it is. Because remember last year they gave him a mess. It was this suggestive bill. It was nonsense.
And he said it was too cute. What did he say? Too cute by half.
Too cute by half. So this time around they're giving him just the one measure in its original form.
Yeah.
26 weeks of unemployment after 2 weeks of a strike, and go ahead and veto it. And already the AFL-CIO, within minutes of his press conference, issued a statement that said the governor is in the hands of corporations.
Ah, love it, love it. Dan, you and I love the chaos, don't we? Isn't it great?
I do. Energy bill remains a mess.
Okay.
The two sides, by the two sides, I mean the utilities and their side and the regulators and their side, which are led by Senator Norm Needleman. It's really his bill.
Yeah.
It's a mess. The bill is not a mess, you know, legally, but it's a mess politically right now.
Yeah.
You know, because the provisions that are trying to save ratepayers money by bonding for public benefits are okay, but they're limited. It's not a huge amount of savings. And the money still has to be paid by somebody somewhere.
Mm.
So that part is okay. But the rest of it, as far as regulation, I don't know what it says, and I don't think anybody else does. The sections that I've read, you know, as was reported by some media, the section that was floating around would have made, you know, those lawsuits against Pura that say that Marissa Gillette, the chair, has taken up too much power. There was actually a section written that said, never mind, everything she did was fine. The lawsuits, it actually said the lawsuits are moot. And now I'm hearing that Senator Needleman didn't know where that even came from.
Oh, that's
where
great.
Where do you think it came from?
Oh, my God. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, keep your head down there and have a happy weekend, and we'll check in with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Have a good weekend.
All right, you too, Dan Haar. How about that, folks? Huh? Buried now in Congress, still being worked on, that one big, beautiful bill, as Mr. Trump likes to put it. And will his 2017 tax cuts be extended? Because if they're not, there are a whole bunch of people in Fairfield and New Haven counties and all over Connecticut. They're going to be paying thousands of dollars more. CBS News correspondent Torian Small joins us now with an update on that. Hey, Torian, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
The one big beautiful bill, as our commander-in-chief likes to refer to it. It's got an extension of his 2017 tax cuts in there. Are these things going to go through or not? What's the buzz so far?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the thing with this one big beautiful bill and that 2017 Trump tax cut extension is it comes with the $3.8 trillion price tag. And while, you know, it's definitely a campaign issue for Trump, he ran on it. It's something that Republicans like to boast, saying that if it isn't passed, then we'll see the largest tax increase in history. The flip side of that is fiscal conservatives, especially those within the Senate, are saying as it stands without correct offsets, it's untenable. So we're seeing people like Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, Rand Paul of Kentucky, come out and say that they can't support it. And without those two and maybe a few others, it's looking like that doesn't have a pathway to passage out of the Senate just yet.
And Torian, it's interesting you bring that up, because for all intents and purposes, the Democrats are powerless here, aren't they? I mean, they're just looking at this as spectators in the third deck here at a stadium. I mean, the opposition, as you correctly point out, is not so much from them, although they're all dead set against it. It's actually Republicans who can kill this whole thing.
Yeah, and this is something that we've been pressing Democrats on really since this session of Congress started. We've pressed them on reports and some actual reporting that we've done from activists and voters who say that they feel the Democratic Party is pretty powerless, but also shows that they're pretty powerless. They haven't done enough. There was quite a bit of backlash to Minority Leader Chuck Schumer for going along with the continuing resolution instead of holding the line and blocking it from going forward. Of course, Schumer said that he did that to avoid a government shutdown and the negative impact that could have on constituents. But ultimately, though, what we're seeing as Democrats do now is pivot to messaging. They campaigned for quite a bit on the 2024 cycle on the fact that Republicans want to cut these safety net programs like Medicaid, like Social Security, et cetera. And this bill, it does feature some cuts to Medicaid and to food stamps or SNAP. So Democrats are saying, as we look to 2026, this is what we're going to campaign on, that Republicans, although they said they didn't do this or wouldn't do this, are doing this now.
CBS News reporter Torian Small. Torian, thanks. Good to speak with you. Take care and be careful out there, okay?
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Torian Small. That's it, folks.